This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
There's no sense of panic here, but there is fear. The Japanese government is telling people the danger from radiation so far is extremely small, but at the same time, that today's third explosion may have damaged the containment vessel around one of the reactor cores. If that is the case, then the situation here could still become very serious. Rupert Wingfield Hayes, BBC News, in Tokyo.
Desperate for the latest information, people here at Shinbashi Station are trying to find out the schedule for rolling blackouts.
Pachinko jingle in space, torpedo beams, comic book violence and escaping steam, gray-suited businessmen hissing against a wall, touch a crumbling guardrail, slow motion car fall. Tokyo, I never can sleep in your arms. Mine keeps on ringing like a fire alarm. Me and all these other dice bouncing around in the cup. Did you have to show me that accident scene? Didn't I get enough shaking up? Still I'm gonna miss you.
Welcome to Radio EcoShock as Japan enters history with the world's most extended nuclear disaster. At least seven nuclear reactors and several pools burning with nuclear waste, with a chain of violent explosions, fire, and radiation blowing from the coast to the capital. I'm Alex Smith. Like you, I've been through a week of jaw-dropping news. It has been painful and emotional, even across a far ocean, to record the fear, suffering, and mass deaths in Japan. I have friends in Japan. I feel for them. I worry for them. That island was moved 8 feet closer to the United States by the quake and then washed over by towering seas. Just like 9/11, the world will never be the same. And just like 9/11, the government and a corporation are withholding, hiding what happens. We are going to peer through the mist with a collection of quick audio clips I've gathered for you literally day and night. You will hear the fog and calls for truth. Under the noise of major media, the ugly face of nuclear terror emerges, not just in Japan, but in Europe, China, Canada, and certainly the biggest nuclear power, the United States. The truth was always out there. Now it's in here. When the lights go out, the danger goes on and on and on. Along the way, I'll interview Nicole Foss from one of the most popular financial blogs anywhere, The Automatic Earth. It turns out she is also a published nuclear expert. We reached her in Eastern Europe late one night. And when we are done with the giant Japan-like risk waiting in American nuclear plants from New England to California, we'll take a quick few minutes to talk with Greenpeace nuclear campaigner Sean Patrick, how Canada pays billions in nuclear support for nothing at all while cutting back the backup systems. Our music starts with Bruce Coburn's Tokyo and ends with the new single by Mother Mother, just out in the new album called Eureka. ABC Australia, Monday the 14th.
We're just hearing some sirens and there's choppers flying overhead. Now, the word has come through. We think there's been an explosion at the nuclear reactor to the south of here. So people have just run through and told us that we're going to have to leave here very soon because of the danger of radiation coming up the coast from down the south.
BBC, Monday the 14th.
Well, welcome to Tokyo. I'm Matt Fine. Let me bring you up to speed with some breaking news. We heard about half an hour ago that at 10 past 6 this morning local time, just after daybreak, there was a third explosion at the second reactor at the Fukushima nuclear plant. Remember, that's the plant where we had an explosion on Saturday and on Monday morning. Well, now there's a third explosion in the second reactor, and news has just come through that the authorities fear that the containment wall made of steel around the core of that reactor may have been damaged. Still a big question mark over that. But let's just listen to what state television announced about this explosion just a few minutes ago.
A big blast was heard at number two reactor, indicating that something wrong happened to the container vessel.
What do you think? Will the hundreds of thousands of Japanese nuclear evacuees ever go home? How will Japan power the industries that help feed the world economy? Are we going to wait for our own reactors to blow? I'll tell you up front, I've chosen voices that have been exiled from the mainstream media for far too long. The people who warned the Japanese government and the Japanese people this would happen. The voice calling the rest of us to take action now, to disarm the terror of nuclear technology. We slept in the dream of experts for too long already. Japan is the alarm clock for an age ending and a new time of clean, safe power.
The Bank of Japan is also doing its part. Governor Masaaki Shirakawa announced a record cash injection into the money markets on Monday.
First of all, it is important to meet the cash needs of the people affected. The Bank of Japan and private banks will cooperate fully to make cash available, so we would like everyone to be reassured.
You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
This is Radio EcoShock. Our next guest is Nicole Foss, a well-known writer at the blog The Automatic Earth, one of the world's most read financial blogs. Nicole, you recently posted a piece where you questioned whether the massive nuclear accident in Japan was really a black swan event. Why?
Yes, I think essentially they were not unpredictable. Really, something is only a black swan if it could not have been foreseen. And I think this event really was quite foreseeable.
I should point out to listeners that you, Nicole, are not just an occasional blogger. You actually have nuclear experience and nuclear education. Tell us briefly about that.
Well, my master's thesis was on nuclear safety in Eastern Europe, and then I was a research fellow at the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies after that, where I wrote a major monograph on the same topic. I developed the ideas from my thesis into a much larger piece of work.
If this was foreseeable, Japan was supposed to be the most advanced nuclear technology country in the world, and yet it has fallen down. What does that mean for nuclear power around the world?
Well, nuclear power does not face the same risks in every place. I would certainly regard nuclear power in an extremely active seismic zone as a very bad idea. Not everywhere is an active seismic zone. So I think there are many locational risks. Japan, I think, should have looked at what could have happened in more depth than they did. The design basis accident for this plant was an earthquake of 7.9. In fact, the plants did withstand the earthquakes. They did shut down as they were designed to do. What took out the cooling systems was the tsunami, but tsunamis are predictable if you have an earthquake. So I think they should have foreseen this. They should not have left the station as vulnerable to station blackout, the loss of external power so that you can no longer run the cooling pumps. That is the major problem at Fukushima today.
But I'm reading, Nicole, that many American plants have the same problem if they encounter a blackout, which could come from an ice storm, it could come from a terrorist attack. There are so many reasons other than seismic. So I'm wondering if we shouldn't have a review, at least, of the safety of nuclear plants in America.
I'm sure we will, and not just in America, but in many other places too. Today, Germany made the decision not to extend the life of a fleet of reactors that they had been considering extending the life for. So I think people are already rethinking what the risks of nuclear power might be. And certainly anything in a seismic zone or any number of other risks that you mentioned, those things should be reassessed. And we should look at whether or not the design basis accident was, in fact, taking enough risks into account. And I would argue in many cases it was not. And so some of these plants are probably not operating at an acceptable risk level. But it may depend on the plant and what sort of conditions they face. We can never protect ourselves against absolutely everything, because everything we try to protect ourselves from costs a certain amount of money. Some risks you simply can't protect yourself from at all. But some things really are foreseeable, and we should think about what we're doing in areas where the risks are clear and the consequences are significant.
I've just listened, Nicole Foss, to some media pundits who say that this will eventually be positive for the economy of Japan. As the country rebuilds, they'll have to spend more government money and so on. Do you see this developing as positive for Japan?
Not even slightly. I think that's a completely ridiculous assertion. I think it's very likely to be Japan's Hurricane Katrina times 100. Japan is in the worst position in the whole world in terms of debt to GDP at 466%. They're in a hole already. They've been trying to stimulate their economy for 20-something years. It won't work now. The idea that if you destroy something and then you have to fix it, that will somehow improve your economy is called the broken window fallacy, and it isn't going to work. I don't know where they think they're going to get the money to recover from the kind of damage that they've seen. America couldn't do it in New Orleans, even although this was one city. This is the entire Japanese coast that we've been looking at levels of utter devastation. So I think it's inconceivable that this is going to be in any way a benefit for the Japanese economy. Much of this damage may simply never really be repaired. People may simply retreat from the coasts in that area. Because if you look at the kind of debris that's there and the kind of destruction, I cannot imagine how that would be repaired anytime soon, especially by a country that is already in the world's worst position in terms of debt.
As we've seen, major Japanese companies from Toyota on down and the semiconductor companies like Sony have closed temporarily, and we have a just-in-time delivery system and globalization. Do you see knock-on effects for economies in other parts of the world?
Oh, very much so. I think especially semiconductors and things like that, those require an absolutely secure source of power, because they have to be kept so clean, so dust-free. If the power goes down, you might as well bulldoze the plant, because the kind of contamination that will have entered will be incompatible with the production of chips. So I think we're definitely looking at impacts there. The power system in Japan is not going to be stable for a while to come, because they are so dependent on nuclear power. This accident has taken, so far, there are 6 reactors at Fukushima 1 that will be out of commission probably permanently. Quite likely the 4 reactors at Fukushima 2 and the 3 at Onagawa as well will, if they ever come back online, will not come back online anytime soon. So Japan will be scrambling to find more LNG and things like that. I don't think it's going to be able to find the amount it needs. So it is going to be facing energy limits. The extent to which other countries are dependent on products that come out of Japan, there will be knock-on effects. I think the major knock-on effect will simply be the spread of fear. And that is what drives markets. So we saw strong market declines today, not just in Japan, but in many other places, because fear is catching. And we've been very close to the end of the current market rally for a while. I think we're very likely to be seeing the next phase of the credit crunch. And really, all it takes is a shift towards fear being the dominant emotion for that to happen. And I think that's very much what we're seeing worldwide today.
What are the major things we should be watching for in the days and weeks ahead? Let's start with nuclear power.
Well, I think in terms of the plants actually in Japan, we need to watch the extent to which they are capable of controlling them. Some of the other reactors at other sites, so far they are managing to maintain enough backup power that they're not losing control of the situation. We need to watch carefully for the potential for them to lose control of that situation in a wider range of reactors. We need to look at whether there are going to be nuclear emissions. There already have been some. I think it's quite clear that the containment has been breached at least some of these reactors. We haven't seen the end of this. We could still see full meltdowns that could lead to steam explosions that could spread reactive material around. I don't think we're looking by any stretch of the imagination at another Chernobyl. That same accident scenario simply really could not happen because Chernobyl-type reactors have completely different accident scenarios than boiling water reactors. So I think we need to very carefully watch what's happening in Japan with this particular plant and the neighboring plants as well. And then to what extent can Japan bring its power production back online and begin to restart its economy? But I think there are going to be major effects in Japan that will last for years, if not decades, as a result of this.
You write about economics, and in the shadow banking system and in the financial world, we've had suggestions that Japanese pension funds or corporations or even the government will have to withdraw money from U.S. treasuries, or perhaps they won't finance new Eurozone materials that need to be rolled over. Do you see problems there?
Not really. I think we're going to be looking at capital flight from the areas where there is the perception of risk to the areas where there is not. And risk perception does not line up with the fundamentals. So if you look at the debt conditions of the United States, they're horrendous. But the credit default swap spreads indicate that the market perception of risk for the United States is very low, whereas in Europe, it's very high. Well, in parts of Europe anyway, it's high and increasing for a number of peripheral European states. Up to now, it has been very low for Japan. I think the risk for Japan is going to start rising. Anywhere where the risks are perceived to be high, you're likely to see capital flight. So I think we will see capital flight from the periphery of Europe. We may start to see capital flight from Japan as well, if the risk of the perceived risk of default starts to increase there. And there's every reason why it should, because Japan is in an incredibly deep hole with debt. And the markets only have two positions. There's complacency and there's panic. So I think the odds that the market may go from complacency to panic with Japan could be quite high. And already we're seeing risks rise in peripheral Europe. I think the U.S. would actually benefit from that situation because the risk in the U.S. is perceived to be low, and money tends to flow from areas of perceived high risk to areas of perceived low risk.
On a more personal level, should we as ordinary people be taking lessons from the long lines for food and gas in Japan to prepare ourselves individually with at least the basics to last for 72 hours for any kind of problem that might arise?
Absolutely. 72 hours is really not a lot for people to be able to look after themselves. And there are so many things that could cause problems that would last at least that long. I'm thinking of the ice storm in particular in Eastern Ontario and Western Quebec that shut down systems for quite a while. So I think absolutely there is a level of personal preparedness that we should all undertake. But I think we should, beyond that, be looking at community preparedness and a lot more emphasis on reintroducing local self-sufficiency and local resilience. I think that is incredibly important. We need to start rebuilding communities. We need to build bottom-up systems that can provide for some of the essentials of our own existence so that we are not so dependent on all these top-down systems that I think are going to prove to be very brittle and acutely vulnerable to cascading system failure. And I think we're going to see the potential for that in Japan. We really do need to learn those lessons here.
As we wrap up, Nicole Foss, is there something you would like to add for our listeners?
Well, I think we need to look at the potential for the credit crisis to resume. We've been saying for a long time at the Automatic Earth that the credit crisis was by no means over, that we were closer to the beginning than the end, and that there was a lot further to go. I think we are now looking at the end of the rally and the beginning of the next phase of the credit crunch. So I think basically we have to think iceberg ahead. Is there any way we can turn the ship? And if we can't turn the ship, we may need to man the lifeboats.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We've been speaking with Nicole Foss, who also blogs as Stoneley at the Automatic Earth. That's theautomaticearth.blogspot.com. And Nicole also does very popular speaking tours, so if you want to be part of that, be sure and contact the Automatic Earth blog. Thank you so much, Nicole Foss. Russia Today, Monday the 14th.
Panic, actually, on the coast here. The panic is being shown by people lining up outside supermarkets. One queue we saw outside the main supermarket in the center of town was about a kilometer long, and that's no exaggeration. People have been queuing up overnight to try and stock up on food. So people are obviously concerned that potentially the spread of radiation might mean they have to stay inside, or another earthquake could lead to food shortages. Already there are food shortages in the town and in this whole prefecture, in fact. One man yesterday we met had to travel 70 kilometers to stock up on food. Right now, several of the food shops are limiting people to five items maximum, and they're having to queue up hours at a time to get into the shop. So obviously there is some level of panic. People aren't showing it on the surface, but they're definitely concerned, to be so much so they're stocking up on food and also fuel. On our way here yet last night, we saw a long queue of cars, again about a kilometre long, outside one of the few petrol stations that were open in the Fukushima prefecture. And there they were only being limited to 20 litres each of petrol. So there's definite fears of just here of the necessities.
This is Alex. Let me tell you exactly what is happening at the 7 stricken reactors in Japan. Oh, wait, no, I can't. Because apparently Japan is on another planet behind the blackout screen. Media planes are forbidden to fly over the worst nuclear plant, Fukushima 1. Nobody is allowed closer than 10 miles. The cameras that showed us the first three explosions have apparently been taken down. 50, or is it 70, brave workers are huddled in a cement bunker somewhere in the plant. The buildings and radioactive pools around them are too hot, both in radiation and in raw temperature, reaching into the thousands of degrees in places for them to inspect. Whatever they are reporting gets boiled down to repetitive press conference pleas by the Japanese Prime Minister or the Cabinet Chief to remain calm. Remain calm. Everything is safe. Just try and get some hard measurements or even the facts about the latest explosion, even 6 hours after it happens. Nobody knows. As though we don't have satellites and war rooms and experts watching from all over the world. As though we are all blind or blinded. I'll devote the next segment of Radio EcoShock to the cries for information, the kind people on the ground need to cope, to survive without cancer, the figures which could warn Americans and Canadians on the West Coast if the worst happens and the radiation comes. I don't think it will, but it could. The knowledge that we need to be human in a world gone mad. Now the dates in the following audio clips are North American one day behind Japan.
Nuclear power is the most frightening thing, even more than a tsunami. The government, the ruling party, the administrators, nobody tells us, the citizens, what is really happening.
Al Jazeera, Saturday the 12th.
Trying to placate people's fears and telling them to continue to remain calm despite all of this?
That's right. There was a news conference, the second in an evening, from the Chief Cabinet Secretary, Yukio Edono, last night, Saturday night, Japan time. He was trying to tell people that basically the amount of radiation had leaking from the first reactor at Fukushima number one had dissipated greatly, that it had gone down by a factor of more than 10 since the moments directly after the explosion. And he did appeal for calm, but that's what they've been doing really since the first inklings of an issue with the nuclear power stations came about on Friday. The Prime Minister then saying that there was no indication of any readings of radioactivity. That obviously has been disproven since.
CNN, Saturday the 12th.
By the government. They're not taking it lightly, but at the same time, they don't want to see people panic here as well, and they are saying that the radioactive levels that have, or radioactivity that has seeped out into the atmosphere, have been at levels that are not going to cause harm. But here's the problem.
CNN, Saturday the 12th.
But we understand now, according to the Nuclear Safety Energy Agency, that this was a hydrogen explosion. It was not an explosion related to the reactor itself. They say that no harmless materials were released into the atmosphere. They say there has been no recorded increase in radioactivity since that explosion. The Prime Minister, Nader Khan, has also said that no one has yet been affected by radioactivity. But the same agency, the nuclear officials here, also saying that some radioactive material was released into the atmosphere that happened earlier today. It was recorded at 8 times higher than the normal level just outside the perimeter of the plant. But again, they're saying that is not enough to cause any problems to the people in the vicinity. But as I say, they have increased that throughout the day, and now you have this 20-kilometre, 12-13-mile exclusion zone. Andrew?
NHK World, Monday the 14th.
Now, the values of this radioactive reading, what is the latest information? In the area around the number one power plant, right after the explosion, 965.5 microsievert per hour was the level. However, after that, this figure went down. In an hour later, at 7:05, it went down to 387.3 microsievert. So these figures, compared to normal days, it is high. Well, let's say 5 microsievert per hour. If it's 5 microsieverts per hour, or if it goes above that, it means that you need to evacuate indoors and stay indoors.
The Tokyo Electric Power Company's response has been not so appropriate so far. The explanation by the Tokyo Electric Power Company has been very unclear so far in the news conferences. And information sharing is very slow, the process of sharing information. And radiation cannot be felt, or we cannot smell radiation, so the residents living near this power plant are very much concerned. If the company says that this does not pose any immediate human impact, and then the company must be open to the information. Professor Sekimura, what is needed in the future?
Democracy Now, Monday the 14th.
You have said, Kevin Camps, that a cover-up is a huge part of this story, as it was with Chernobyl. Why?
Well, I mean, as Harvey indicated, if the U.S. Navy, and as you reported, if the U.S. Navy, which is 100 miles away, has to move an aircraft carrier away from the shore because the radioactivity levels are of concern, then all of these assurances by Tokyo Electric Power Company and the Japanese government that everything's really okay. I mean, a statement made 2 days ago by the chief spokesman for the government, the secretary of the cabinet, was that the evacuation is underway and the wind is blowing out to sea, so everything's really going to be okay. Well, we have indications that the wind direction may change towards the mainland of Japan. So those false assurances are not helping the situation. And another question that needs to be asked is, well, if the wind is blowing out to sea, what's in that direction? Well, the United States is in that direction. And we see, again, the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission saying no harmful level of radioactivity could reach the United States. Well, we're in the middle of this crisis. A new reactor is now melting down. How did they determine that the containments are going to hold? How did they determine that the radioactivity will not blow in large quantities to the United States?
Did you have to show me that accident scene? Didn't I get enough shaking up? Still I'm going to live.
That's Bruce Coburn, and Radio EcoShock will be right back with more on the nuclear disaster in Japan.